what is spontaneous to us means we have not seen the struggle of that individual to reach the spontaneous moment. Look at my body. People around Ramakrishna said, look at the master. He has his favorite even in the ashram. Who was his favorite?
Vivekananda.
But look, he has put his hand on his head and Vivekananda has become what he is. The master placed his hand on his head because he had worked for that moment of grace. But people see spontaneously Vivekananda becoming something. The word spontaneous means we are not aware of the efforts put in by the individual. Without efforts, nothing can be achieved. Whether you call it technique, whether you call it effort, whether you call it spontaneous, whether you call it long drawn. You get that point. But the spontaneous moment is preceded by long efforts. So ultimately it boils down that you have to use technique to experience the first moment. To experience the first, you have to work. Yes?
Start into
a
grace,
like what to all of us.
The moment of grace, that
moment of grace. See, why we call it the moment of grace? Because we are elated, we are suddenly very happy, you see, and we contribute that happiness to some power outside of us, who has rained all that happiness on us, forgetting that I myself have worked for it. But at that time, the ego is so totally crushed that I don't think that I have worked for myself. At that time, I look up and say, oh God, thank you. You get that point?
Has that moment of grace any relationship
with the objective world? How can the subjective world have relation with the objective world?
Because it is a salutary impact,
not
otherwise.
Salutary impact is there, the man. No more blind than deaf.
In the objective world.
In the objective world.
No,
though there is no guarantee, he will still be driven away or swept away by tidal waves. There is no guarantee. But there is all the surety that that man, even if it is driven away or swept away, again will sit back and say, no, there is something different from this. No. And has experienced again. But the one who has not experienced, whether he is swept away or not,
but the impact is there on the objective world.
The impact is priceless. The impact is indelible. If the moment does not repeat for 10 lives, even then that impact does not vanish. It has become a part of his memory, subjective memory, not objective memory. Again. My whole purpose here is to confuse. I told you time and again.
Which is priceless because it's subjective. If it was objective, it would be priceless.
Still, in the objective world, people consider money priceless. This means that from the point of a broken and surface awareness, we must reach out to unbroken and deep awareness. You get this point. Now we are coming to the definition of the split second. This means that from the point of our broken and surface awareness, we must reach out to unbroken and deep awareness, reaching up to pure awareness. What have I told you? That if you can numb memory for a little while, and thoughts are not formed for a little while, for a split second. In that split second, there will be no noise inside of you, and you will whisper, and you will listen to the whisper of your divine fragment within you, and that you will consider as the moment of grace. So, this is what is described in detail here. That means that from the point of our broken and surface awareness, this broken and surface awareness is
a disturbance in our awareness because of the running thoughts. But reach out to unbroken and deep awareness, reaching up to pure awareness. Unbroken and deep awareness, that is pure awareness, is the awareness of the infinite divine mind. It means to be aware. Just wait one moment. The divine factor within you, within me, within anyone here, has an outside covering. Satyam, absolute, one absolute, Satyam, cannot create because the vibrations are too great. Nothing can exist. But if in a part of itself, if the vibrations are dropped to the stage where creation can take place, Satyam means no creation. When it comes down, the vibrations come down in the part of itself to a stage where creation can take place. Creation takes place. When we talk about creation taking place, we mean outside covering we can call creation or existence, you see. So this outside covering is needed around an inside divine presence. Now, when we talk about the infinite divine mind, the mind of God, it is a covering of the divine wholeness. Satyam in its manifest form is divine wholeness. That divine wholeness has, just like us, an outer covering. That outer covering is infinite divine mind. That is why I just now said that if we can come, if the human brain can communicate with the mind of God.
It is outside covering.
It's outside covering. The infinite divine mind by itself is a covering. You see? But it is Satyam's covering, this is our covering. The brain is our covering. So if our covering can touch the covering of God, I call it the brain of man can communicate with the mind of God. For a split second. That is the moment of grace. So here we are talking about the mind of God. Unbroken and deep awareness, that is pure awareness, is the awareness of the infinite divine mind. And it means to be aware always in all conditions, in sleep, and more importantly in death, and between the moment of death to the moment of the next birth, in the next life, and also during the intervening period. This is the main purpose of life and birth. All else is mithya knowledge. Wait here. We are talking about being aware in sleep, being aware at the moment of death. I am mortal. We all are mortal. God is immortal, they say. What is the difference? His consciousness does not lower down. He is infinitely conscious always. He, she, it, whatever it is, you call God, as you like it. We are mortal, why? Because when I die, I am unconscious. The theory says, I will take another birth. And I have taken another birth. I am not conscious. I was this person last. Isn't it? If my awareness is not broken, I can place my million births. I am as immortal as God. No? Yes? So, once again, this is subjective memory. Rather, it's the objective memory. This is the subjective memory. If my consciousness, if my awareness is unbroken, even in sleep, I am sleeping here, am fast asleep. Somebody says something, somebody does something, I am not aware. Because my awareness has come to a very low point where it cannot register anything. But my awareness should be such, yoga says, that I may be fast asleep here and somebody talks something, I should hear, somebody does something here, I should see. That is called totality of awareness.
The independence of God.
Slowly.
Higher senses and so on.
Awareness is not dictated by higher senses. It is by itself, it is its own force. Awareness is not intelligence. We are all aware, not equally intelligent. We are all intelligent, not equally aware. Don't get confused. But the five senses have nothing to do with awareness. You get my point? It is an independent substance which we make use of. And we think that it is a part of our five senses. Because when I feel dull and sleep, awareness goes up. Awareness doesn't go. I am not aware of awareness. My brain is not aware of awareness. You get my point?
Is it a body?
No. It's an energy. Energy to be used by every living substance. Whether it be man, animal, whatever. Infinite Divine Mind is an energy which any one of us can use, depending upon how much or how deep or how fine we can communicate. You get that? Awareness doesn't leave us. We break awareness from the state of our brain. Our brain is so structured that if it is not at that optimum level, it will not be able to be aware. Our brain has that weakness. Our brain has that weakness of not being at optimum level all the time. We get up in the morning, depending on each individual, slowly the energy drains, and the child at 7 o'clock will do like this, at 9 o'clock I will do like this, at 11 o'clock he might do like this, depending upon how much store of energy each one of us has, and the brain refuses to work. When it totally refuses to work, it is asleep. There are different words for the same state or different state of the same thing. You get my point? Sleep is not something else. Sleep is a state of the same brain that was active in the morning and now it's dull at night. You get my point? But awareness is by itself. Our brain should be able to tap that awareness. How much it can tap will depend on each individual.
Would technique then touch the brain and enhance it as it will be aware?
If we go a little further, we'll come to it. Okay? Just ask me if I don't. This is possible only when in any one objective life, whether it be this or any subsequent life, we learn the technique of linking our individual mind and brain to the infinite mind and experience the subjective and thereby the objective existence. May not be clear?
Both about mind and brain.
Yeah. We know it, they are both different. We know they are both different. But, supposing you have a subjective experience, say for example, as you call it, spontaneous, okay? You have a subjective experience. But like a dream not remembered, that subjective experience has passed, you don't know if it is not registered in your brain. You get my point? Brain is important for this very important purpose. to register our subjective experiences. But today the brain is used to get a job, to earn a little money, that's all. We do not know the possibility of brain. The brain that 90% of brain or 95% of brain that we don't make use of, and that is only for communication on the subjective level.
When you use the word linkage, when you use the word linking individual mind and infinite mind, because individual mind you said is universal mind flowing through us.
That is the definition and you have accepted it verbatim. An individual mind is not my property. Just as the breath in my lungs is not my property.
Yes.
But individual mind, when it passes to me, is contaminated. And in that contaminated state, it is different from infinite divine mind. If you can, whilst it is in you, keep it not contaminated, and let it be of the quality of infinite divine mind, there will be communication. You understand?
The communication is prevented because of the contamination of the individual mind. Leave aside the question of the expression of that in the brain for memory and expression. That's a different thing.
But that's more important. The register in brain is more important. You may be able to communicate, but if you do not register in your brain, that experience is lost. That priceless experience is lost.
But it is only held in the shape of memory then. That priceless experience when the
brain... subjective memory, it's not objective memory. Again you are making a mistake. There is a world of a difference between normal objective memory and subjective memory.
Subjective memory is not held by the brain.
It is not held by brain at all.
It is held by what?
It is an independent property. We take on loan many things and consider that all that belongs to us. We take many things on loan. You see? We take the air on loan, we take the food on loan, we take the water on loan, we take infinite mind on loan, we take subjective experience on loan, we take so many things on loan. But then we have it. You see, it is mine. It is my subjective experience. I have no right to call it my subjective experience. Again, you are confused. We'll come to it again. Don't worry. We'll go further now. Today I am very much in a mood to confuse. This also the Yoga Sutra teach clearly, hence the necessity of studying properly the Yoga Sutra. So let us today first see the power of the mind and brain under scientific medical conditions. So physics as science does not accept the presence of mind and even the infinite divine mind. The greatest shock that came to me last month, when I was in France and talking to a few friends, that there is no equivalent word of mind in French language. Can you realize that? Can you imagine that there is no equivalent word of mind in the French language? So how could I talk to them about mind, infinite mind, individual mind? They said, there is the word mind. What are you talking about? So, we are now coming to that which is called mind. So, let us today at first see the power of the mind and brain under scientific medical conditions. Though physics as science does not accept the presence of mind or even infinite divine mind. Very learned scientists, physics scientists, called mind the ghost in the machine. Called mind the ghost in the machine. When they talk about mind, they think they are talking about the ghost in physical world. Something they think is in your brain, doesn't exist. Let us consider the effects of a placebo given to a patient who will respond effectively because he or she is told that the drug or medicine will be very effective by the doctor in whom he or she has faith. The placebo may be just glucose water. On the other hand, consider the effect of a nocebo given to a patient who considers all drugs and medicines or any type of treatment as injurious to the body will have or show all negative signs even though the treatment is just proper. What is really working? The drug or the minds of these two patients? So, depressed people lower the immune response and even weaken their DNA's ability to repair the body. Anything can therefore function as a placebo or a nocebo. The doctor's personality, his manners, the environment around the patient and the patient's mind all go to work for better or worse. The cause of disease is everywhere. State of mind. You know, in military and all, tension stands at ease. Ease is a mental and physical state that there are no tensions. Correct? Disturb this state of ease. You disturb this stage of ease, and what happens? We are talking about stress, we are talking about all this nonsense in this world today, tensions. While, according to yoga, a human being should always, all 24 hours, be at ease. All 24 hours of the entire life remain at ease. And if that ease is disturbed, he will develop disease. You see? Why should you allow this ease to be disturbed? Now, you have got 100 excuses to tell me, oh, this happens. Whatever happens, the ease should not be disturbed. You get my point? There is no sense in using the word tension, stress, what not. The human mind, the human brain, the human body is structured for ease, not disease. Understand? And yet, every one of us is not free from this ease because we are allowed disturbance of some kind to disturb our ease. We all shake our head. Why do we allow it? Why do we allow our ease to be disturbed? Somebody is sick. We have been taught from the beginning to avoid ease. We have been taught from the beginning, it says, to avoid ease. And therefore, we have always this ease.
When we say we are taught, when we say we are taught,
he says, I am not saying.
And then when we say, we are actually shifting the blame to somebody else. Actually, we disturb the ease of ourselves.
No, we disturb the ease of our children. We are criminally responsible for disturbing the ease of our children. Children 2 years, 3 years old, innocent children, the way we shout at them, the way we behave between husband and wife and all, we are criminally responsible for disturbing the ease of these beautiful, innocent children. And then it begins. Once they experience disturbance, then they look out for disturbance. And the life then goes. We have this ruined our life. We are not content with that. We want to ruin their lives also. And then say we love our children. So, what I want to tell you is that the purpose of birth, the main purpose of birth, even if you don't do yoga, even if you do not experience subjective state, you have a right to live at ease. This is the fundamental promise of yoga, that you have a right to live at ease. If you cannot live at ease, yoga teaches you how to live at ease. And if you start living at ease, the disturbances will go. So the dis of the disturbances, this ease will also go. You don't believe it. The cause of the disease is everywhere. That is holistic. A holistic disease requires a holistic medicine. Simply it means an approach that includes not only the body but also the mind and the environment. We say, you have just come out of your sickness, you must go to some hill station, to some sanatorium. You go to the hill station and carry with you your disturbances in your ease, and so you carry your own disease. So going to the hill station is not going to help you if you have not learned to set aside those factors that disturb your ease. If you are physically disturbed, if you are mentally disturbed, if you are emotionally disturbed, if you are psychologically disturbed, and this disturbance is every day, all the time, talk of yoga. Why come here? Why come here? You must first accept the fact that you can live without these disturbances in your ease. Is that clear? Unless your mind accepts, unless your brain and mind accept this fact that you can live without any disturbance to your ease, if this is the fundamental thought, then progress in yoga is possible, not otherwise. We have talked about obstacles and hindrances, earlier we have talked, no? What are these obstacles and hindrances? Nothing but disturbances in our ease. And how to prevent these disturbances to disturb our ease? We'll see. Therefore, let not being sick be the dominant input in your mind's computer. Therefore, let not being sick be the dominant input in your mind's computer. In other words, in your brain and mind, do not put the thought, oh, there are always disturbances that will disturb my ease. Don't put that thought into your brain's computer. Oh, that there are so many reasons why I'm disturbed, my ease is disturbed. If you are in that state of mind, it will be difficult for you to go ahead. So don't put that negative aspect in your brain. First be convinced that you can live and you have a right to live without your ease being disturbed. Then we can take the next step. This holistic approach leads the mind to the free zone, not touched by disease. But unless the patient knows that such a zone of deep silence, the free zone exists, the disease has the upper hand. Now, again, no, don't be in a hurry to change the page. Again, we'll read in the manner that we have been talking about now. We will read like this. Holistic approach leads the mind or brain to the free zone. There is in your brain and mind a free zone. What do you mean by free zone? A zone that is free from disturbances. So, but unless the patient knows that such a zone of deep silence, the free zone exists, that this is at the upper end. That means your disturbances will have the upper end. Where is that zone? Where is that zone, that free zone? The silent area. What you have called it? The silent area. The free zone. Why is it a free zone? Why is it called a free zone? Science has tried every possible means of disturbing a certain area in the brain. All disturbances, when they reach that point, disappear. There is only silence. There is no reaction to those disturbances sent. So it is called the silent area or the free zone. The free zone of disease. That means any type of disturbance. This is our little brain. The depth of the brain may be 20, 50 50 millimeters. Meaning about 2 inches. Most of us, all of us, the better of us, the very good amongst us, some scientists, some very educated people, even they do not sink below 2 millimeters of our brain surface. There are 50 millimeters of gray matter, and the best of us do not sink more than 2 millimeters from the surface of our brain. If the ocean is 8 miles deep somewhere, not evenly everywhere, 8 miles deep somewhere, after 50 or 100 feet, it's not possible for us to dive. Even with equipment, it is not possible to dive. Even with a sphere perfectly made, it's not possible to dive more than 2 miles. We would be crushed. We would be suffocated. We will lose our awareness. This 8 miles of ocean, the pressure is such, it is estimated that if you take a steel, hard steel cube, and put it at the spot where the Pacific is 8 miles deep, and let it drop, a cube of the size of this room, solid. When it will touch the bottom of Pacific Ocean at that point, it will be thin as this paper, sheet of paper. That is the pressure of water only 8 miles below. If you go more than 1 or 2 millimeters, below 2 millimeters, Pacific is nothing. The suffocation in Pacific is nothing. That is why normally we are not able to go below 2 millimeters from the surface of our gray matter. This beautiful free zone is somewhere around a little below the middle of our brain, about 30 millimeters. We require 30 million lives to reach there, normally. Normally. Without effort, we might take 30 million lives to reach 30 millimeters below the surface of our brain matter. Don't get discouraged. I am not here to discourage you. But, in the English language there are so many ifs and buts, you see. But, yoga methods can take us there. Yoga methods can take us there. And when we can reach there, we truly experience the subjective world. We truly experience communication with infinite mind. We truly experience communication with our own divine faculty. And that is the purpose of life. That is the purpose of yoga. But all of us, you and I and everyone here, we are all lazy. If you have to do exercise for 15 minutes or half an hour, we may not find time, we are so busy. And therefore, people have taken the easier method. And with great veneration they say, bhakti. Forgive me if I am using wrong language. But to take the channel of bhakti is to dress our language in very noble language, to say that I am very lazy. It's a very fine method of saying it, you see. Because I don't know whether the energy we waste in exercises is more, or the energy we waste in our bhakti or japa is more, I don't know that. But it seems to be easier done. And therefore, we do not follow certain laid down methods, techniques of Yoga Sutra. You are all independent human beings. You have all your own choice to make. You can follow whatever way you like. My duty is to present all the ways. To select is your choice. But if you will come to me and say, Bhakti, I will in my mind, come on, we'll go further. We turn the page now. Yeah. I don't think we'll finish today at this rate. No. A disease cannot take hold without the patient accepting it. We have just said that unless we are not convinced, or we are convinced, on these two aspects depend everything. If we are convinced that my peace should not be disturbed, that's one picture. If you are convinced that there are so many factors in life that will disturb my peace, that's another picture. You see? So, if you have accepted the other picture, that oh, there are so many factors that can easily disturb my ease, then this sentence is readable. A disease cannot take hold without the patient accepting it. This is the basis of the understanding of the working of the immune system. Medical science today is setting up a concrete system called the immune system and is pinning all hopes into it. Will the system work, or the mind of the patient is the question. Health is a dynamic equilibrium of total bodily energies. It is a state when one feels ease. A disturbance of this ease leads to disease. Healing is a process of returning this ease that is disturbed. Note, what is poison in modern medical science is cure in homeopathy. How can these two systems disagree completely and yet cure people? It is because the body's immune system responds when the body-mind balance is restored. The immune cells themselves do not judge whether the doctor believes in modern science or homeopathy or acupuncture. Every system is capable of working so long as it is able to influence the patient's participation or awareness to disease. So actually, what is working? In the final analysis, the patient's mind. Here, when I talk about disease, I talk about your state of mind only. That it is negative and it accepts all factors being capable of disturbing. Or it's a positive stand where you do not accept that disturbances can disturb my ease. You see, these are two distinct stands you have to maintain. The earlier you take up the stand that, no, if I am structured by God and nature into ease,
why should disturbances disturb my ease? If you begin your life with this, if not till now, at least from today, the first step tomorrow is possible. But this is very important. Don't take it for granted that you are journeying the local train, or going a little late to office, or coming home without remembering what the wife told you to bring. All these factors will easily disturb your ease. Don't let it. So make up your mind from today, what stand you will take in your life. This I have told you in our last meeting, I am repeating again. Kittens are born with the eyes shut and the optic nerve undeveloped, and this lasts for a few days. During this period, they occasionally open and shut their eyes, and this may even be painful. From the first day onward, the frequency increases. They yet see or register nothing. But if a kitten is blindfolded, or it does not occasionally keep opening and shutting the eyes during these few days, it is found that it will be blind for entire life. You will ask, is mere opening and closing eyes so important? Many have asked me whether physical exercise can bring about transformation. You get my point? Perhaps that's a home question to me. Whether physical exercises, what we call techniques and methods, can bring about transformation. For this note is given here. What is the purpose of this note? The kitten, because it is opening and shutting the eyes, it will see, is wrong. The kitten is structured to see. But if it will not open and close its eyes to regenerate the optic nerve, it will remain blind. So I say that you are structured by God and nature, you are structured into transcendence. You and I and all of us, by God and nature, we are structured into transcendence. It is not something we have to reach for, gain, achieve. We are structured in transcendence. But a few techniques or methods like opening and closing the eyes will permanently open our subjective eyes to the subjective world of transcendence. You get my idea now? This opening and closing of eyes. It doesn't give vision. If kitten is not structured to see, it can open and close the eyes a million times. But because it is structured to see, but the optic nerve has to get certain development, it has to do that. But we don't believe that we are structured into transcendence. We believe that we are structured as idiots. And we have to achieve something. That's the whole trouble. You see? All of us. Well, I'm a papi, I'm this, I'm that. Some call it, we are badda, we are slaves, we are this, we are sinners. Why are we talking on these lines? Why? When we are structured into transcendence, why do we say that we are born donkeys? I can't understand. That we are born idiots. We are not. We are structured into transcendence. All we have to do is, like the kitten, carry out certain techniques of opening and closing the subjective eye. That's all. You don't believe it. I can't help it. The experiencing of seeing during this period actually shapes inner neuronal connections in the brain, developing the brain center of vision so sight is possible. The kitten's brain is programmed for sight, yet it requires seeing during this period for programming to unfold. When a human baby is born, it can see. But we encourage it to sleep 20 hours a day. The human brain, like the brain of the kitten, can or could thus limit its possibilities in the same way. Just as a kitten, by not opening the eyes, can prevent his own vision, we as little babies, we can keep our subjective eye closed totally, and when we grow up we can blame that I can't see the subjective world.